Thanks for checking out this past Sunday's teaching. Every Tuesday, we'll release audio from the previous Sunday's message. If you want to hear the Vertical staff talk more about what these teachings mean for everyday life, a roundtable discussion releases every Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
We're in our third week of our series, Consider the Raven, where we're talking rather extensively about the emotion fear. Perhaps no other human emotion has so much power in our lives. We know this because it so often shows up physically. When we're afraid, we feel the physical symptoms. And I believe, we haven't said this yet in this series, but I believe that's actually a good thing in certain circumstances. It's a reaction that God has given us to back away from danger. I want to talk about a few common fears as we're just setting up where we're going in the Bible today, mainly for this reason. I want you to know that if you experience one of these fears, you're a lot like the rest of us. The first one that I'll mention, I actually don't live in fear of, but when I experience it, it does throw me a little bit, and that's heights. I know people that are so terrified of heights, and if you're in this group, I want to encourage you to watch Alex Honnold's Free Solo. This man climbs a mountain with no ropes, and I spent the entire time literally about to vomit watching this man take his life in his own hands. It's such an incredible experience, especially if you're someone who struggles with the fear of heights. How about this next one? Snakes. Who isn't afraid of snakes? They hide and they hurt you. They're so dangerous. In fact, we have a name for people who aren't afraid of snakes. Weird. Everyone is afraid of snakes. This next one, actually, my youngest son suffers from pretty heavily, and that's the fear of spiders. I didn't have this fear until 1990 when I watched the movie Arachnophobia. People are dying almost every minute in this movie, and it is the legitimate reason why I still, every time, check my shoes before I put them on. Those of you who have watched this movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about, the fear of spiders. The next one I actually do suffer from, and people don't believe me, and that's a little bit frustrating, the fear of public speaking. Every week before I stand in front of the crowds here in the auditorium at Vertical Church, I get that nervous, anxious feeling. It's something I have to battle through every single week. The fear of public speaking, those of you who suffer from it and are put in those positions, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It can be terrifying to speak in front of people. The last one my wife suffers with, so I'm particularly sensitive to this, the people who have a fear of seeing blood. I know this takes on such physical symptoms because it happens to my wife. She actually passes out. So many people experience, though, as a stomach pain, being squeamish. Even the word squeamish makes us squeamish, being afraid of blood. These fears are very real fears. They happen to so many of us. The last one I actually didn't know that I had a big problem with until I was put into a situation where I had to face it. Many of you will recognize this fear, the fear of small spaces, claustrophobia. My friend Jeff invited me to go caving one time and I foolishly agreed. We were camping out the night before and I have to tell you, it was one of the longest nights of my life. Mostly because I wasn't sleeping because it was 28 degrees outside, but as I wasn't sleeping, the fear began to grow. I convinced myself that something terrible was going to happen to me going into this cave. Hundreds of people had done it before me, even some of my closest friends. But I was convinced that I was going to be the one that something terrible was going to happen to. Again, my name is Ben, and I'm an Enneagram 6. As I entertained the fear, though, over the course of that evening, it transitioned to something even more catastrophic than the fear of death. I was afraid that I was going to get stuck. It's almost comical to talk about now, but I had convinced myself that I was going to get stuck in this cave forever. In fact, I started to think about if I didn't eat over the course of time being stuck, maybe I would lose enough weight to become unstuck. That's how real this fear became for me. And fear usually follows a pattern in my story. Maybe you'll recognize this as I mention it to you. The first thing is, a thought, a fearful thought, races through my mind. I don't pick the thought. I'm not controlling the thought. It just happens. The second thing that happens is actually what doesn't happen. I refuse to tell anybody about this fearful thought, and it starts to take root in my mind. But the one thing I convince myself of is that I can't share it with anyone, because if I do, I will appear crazy. The next thing that happens is that I dig in. I determined to stay in the situation. So many times, the things that are causing me fear would be solved if I would just remove myself from the situation. But even in my fear, I'm stubborn. Are you like that? I decide that I can't lose against the fear, and that leads to the last phase of fear as it takes root in my story. I become miserable. I become miserable because I'm in the fear alone. I haven't spoken it to anyone, and it begins to grow in my life, in my world internally. Now, obviously, because I'm sitting here teaching to you right now, I didn't get stuck in the cave that day. In fact, I've been back many times since and taken other friends with me. But I share that with you because I want you to know the power that fear can have in our story. By the way, the name of this cave, Graves Cave. I can't make this stuff up. You can look it up, Google it after this teaching is over. Graves Cave, I was determined was going to be my own grave because fear can have so much power in our lives. It can force us to become someone that we actually aren't. We're going to talk a lot about that today. We often give credit to fear for what it does when we entertain it long enough for it to overwhelm us. What I'm going to point out today, though, is that although that is the end, fear has so much power leading up to that moment. It can cause us to do things that make us even unrecognizable. It can cause us to do things that make us, in our relationships with our friends even question us. In fact, it's the people that are closest to us that often notice that something's wrong even before we do. Maybe you found yourself in that situation where people are asking you, hey, what's the matter? And you can't even put words to it. Often that is fear. I want to point out this big phrase for us so that it kind of unifies us in this emotion. Rather than admitting our fear, most of us, rather than admitting our fear, we act it out by acting out. Let me explain what I mean by that phrase. Something that begins internally and overwhelms us and overtakes us ends up translating in our life into actions. Let me give you a few classic examples that have occurred throughout history. The first is with the man who randomly decides to sleep around the night before he gets married. It's a classic example. It's repeated in art often. Why? Because it's so cliche. The question is this man's character, or is it something he's doing because he's afraid? Let's take the example of the woman who allows fear to drive and decides to either overeat or overspend, conversations that I have a lot inside of our community. My question is it about the food for that individual? Is it about the object that they're purchasing? Or is this an activity that simply is covering over fear? In discussing this idea with Austin, our student pastor, we talked about students. What do we see in students most often? It's a student who decides to back up and close himself off from relationship, even relationships with people that they know care. Why? Because it just feels safer. In the end, it isn't, but that's fear driving, pushing away from vulnerability. I want to give you a phrase as we're leading into talking about another day in the life of Saul that I think is going to hold us all accountable and also encourage us at the same time. It's unique to be able to do those two things simultaneously, but I believe this phrase is going to do it for all of us. If you don't know what's driving it in relation to your fear, if you don't know what's driving it, discipline won't fix it. That's a big point. Let me slow down and repeat that for us. When it comes to our fear, if we don't know what's driving it, discipline will not fix it. I meet so many who are frustrated in their lives, in their stories, because they continue to participate in things even though they don't want to. And particularly those who grew up in religious environments, strictly religious or conservative backgrounds inside of churches, like I did. Many of us have been taught that discipline is the thing that will fix our problems. The trick is, if fear is driving the behavior, most often, discipline will not fix it. God has given us an alternative. What I'd like to do with this teaching in this week of this series is set some people free from the strategies that maybe you're using to try to overcome crippling fear. Discipline just isn't going to do it. The big point about this now is the deeper the fear, the more dangerous it is for us. And the deeper the fear, the more dangerous it is for our relationship with God. Today, we're going to look closely at another day in the life of King Saul, this very complex man. We're going to point out where fear shows up in his story again. And don't miss the fact that we now are in our third week talking about how fear dramatically changed this man's life. We pointed out, Austin did from week one, that fear not only eventually cost him everything, it also cost him his legacy. I want to just take a little bit turn here and talk about the fact that our legacy is something we should be thinking about more. The people who come after us are going to remember us in a particular way. I believe if we think about this more, it will cause us naturally to become less selfish people. And that is very much needed in our culture today. We all will have a legacy, and how we live actually determines that legacy. Don't miss the fact that we've spent 3 weeks now talking about this man as an example of what not to do. And that actually is tragic. We're talking about Saul because he's giving us the way that we shouldn't live. We're actually trying to live in a way opposite that he did. My challenge for all of us is that we have a decision to make with our own legacy. No matter how things have gone up until this point, you could actually make a decision today to leave a different legacy based on your actions. You have that ability, you have that choice. And today, as a teacher, I'm calling you to make that decision if you hadn't already. By this time in the story, by this point in the story, Samuel, a man who was very important to Saul, has died. This was a big loss for Saul. When things got very difficult, Samuel was the number one person that Saul wanted to talk to. He was his most consistent and trustworthy confidant. Samuel was there for Saul in so many difficult situations, and the fact that he was dead was a huge loss to Saul. I don't want to miss the humanness of Saul as we talk about him as an example of what not to do. There's so many places where Saul does the exact things that we do naturally. And I understand having a confidant that is suddenly lost. Don't you? Maybe you've been in that scenario. That's exactly where Saul was, attempting to do some very difficult things, now without the number one person that was there to help him. I want to pick up in 1 Samuel chapter 28, verse 3. We're going to roll through this day pretty detailed so that we can pick up on some actions that Saul participated in that were extremely dangerous and led to some bad places. I love to be able to give teachings like this that are warnings for us because it allows us to learn the lesson, catch this, without having to live the lesson. Oh, what a privilege we have as the Bible shares with us things that go poorly so that we don't have to have those things go poorly in our own story to learn the lesson. We're leveraging the life of Saul in that exact way. 1 Samuel chapter 28, verse 3 reads this way. Meanwhile, Samuel had died, and all Israel had mourned for him. Samuel wasn't just important for Saul, he was important for the nation, and now he was gone. He was buried at Ramah, his hometown. And Saul had banned from the land of Israel all the mediums and those who consulted spirits of the dead. Now, I want you to think about the fact that the person who wrote this down put those things so closely together. Let me review for you just in our language. Samuel, a very important man of God, was dead. Instantly, Saul decides to banish all the mediums, all the evidence of witchcraft from his kingdom, to put them out. It begs the question, why would Saul do this? What was behind this action? I believe that the biblical author put these things together for a very particular reason. And I think it gives us reason to celebrate Saul. I think Saul knew that he would be tempted to use these people in order to conjure up the spirit of Samuel. When things got difficult, Saul knew that he would be looking for Samuel even in death. And my imagination takes me to this place. I believe that Saul and Samuel may have actually had this conversation. Saul, make sure that you don't look for me after I'm gone. Allow God to lead you. And Saul makes good on that conversation or advice if it happens. What we do know is that Saul takes action. And he knows his tendency. This is a lesson for all of us today. When we become aware of our tendencies, it gives us the unique ability to set boundaries against those tendencies. If you're a person watching this teaching today and you struggle with fear and you know your tendencies towards fear, it is your responsibility to take action and set up boundaries against those things that trigger your fear. This is exactly what Saul did, and we can celebrate him for this today. He knew that he would be going to the mediums to try to find the spirit of Samuel when things got difficult for him, and he set up boundaries in order to not do that. Unfortunately, things get worse from here, as you might predict. An old, practiced fear trigger shows up in Saul's life. Don't miss that. We're going to come back to it a little bit later. It was something that had made him afraid in the past, and it happens again. His fear trigger shows up. Let me read that for you. The Philistines set up their camp at Shunem, and Saul gathered all the army of Israel and camped at Gilboa. Don't let the places confuse you. This is what's happening. Saul's enemy shows up, and he goes out to meet the enemy. When Saul saw the vast Philistine army, notice this phrase, we're going to talk about it for a moment, he became frantic with fear. He asked the Lord what he should do, but God refused to answer him. Man, that's difficult to hear, isn't it? Samuel was gone, and Saul was asking God directly, what should I do? But God refused to answer him, either by dreams or by sacred lots or by the prophets. I want to really focus on this phrase for just a moment, frantic with fear. I want you to understand, if you're a person who experiences this, it is a perfect description of what actually happens when we entertain fear for too long. We become frantic. This is exactly what happened to Saul. And in a strange way, this should comfort us. This has been happening to people for a very long time. Those of us who live with an excessive amount of fear, we're not abnormal. There are other people like us. God understands this, and he's willing, even in our current circumstances, to move in and exercise his power and do something for us. However, we must be extremely careful, because if we're not, we can become incredibly predictable. This is why it's so easy for those in power to manipulate us based on fear. People in power know exactly how we will act if we convince ourselves to give in to our fear, especially if they can convince us. Let me take a moment in this teaching just to give you a little bit of a clue about how we should navigate, especially the next few months in the United States. We should be very leery of people who tell us, first, you should be very afraid, and secondly, I am the one to solve that fear. Do we have reason to be afraid? Certainly, the world is a scary place. I'm proposing to you today that God is the only one, hear me on this, God is the only one who can make good on the promise to satisfy and obliterate our fears from our story. God has the ability to do that, not other people. We're going to come back around to that also as we wrap up this teaching. Remember that we're discussing what happens when a person gives in to fear. I feel compassion for Saul in this way because he's acting just like I do. There's so many of us in our fear that decide to take action, rash action. There's a word for that, counterphobic. It simply means that when we become afraid, we move in and we try to control the thing that's making us afraid. And eventually, remember what I described earlier, we feel alone in it. I want you to notice that Saul actually did some good things here. He decided to seek God through dreams, through any means necessary. He even talked to the men of God of the day. And I give him credit for this because he did what most of us don't do. He looked to God first. But unfortunately, we see that God doesn't answer. And this was just more than Saul could bear. It causes Saul to do something that you'll recognize as I describe it. It causes Saul to flip the switch. That moment when he can't find God in the three ways that he tried, he runs out of patience, the fear becomes too strong based on the presence of his enemy, and he decides to take things into his own hands. He repeats a mistake that he's already made before. Even though his hands are smaller and weaker than God's, he would rather have things in his hands because he feels like he can control them rather than taking them to God and patiently waiting for a solution. I want to give you the words that the Bible tells us in Psalm 28, starting in 1 Samuel 28, starting in verse 7. Saul then said to his advisors, "Find a woman who is a medium." Man, this is confusing. He's banished the mediums from his kingdom. Now he's looking for them. "So I can go and ask her what to do." His advisors replied, and this is a strong warning for us, be careful who you allow to advise your behavior. His advisors replied, "There's a medium at Endor." So Saul disguised himself by wearing ordinary clothing instead of his royal robes. Then he went into the woman's home at night, accompanied by two of his men. He says to the woman, notice his urgency, "I have to talk to a man who has died," he said. "Will you find his spirit for me?" Saul makes this request. Two big points in this action that I want to point out to you today, because I feel like God is cautioning our entire community against these two things. Fear will cause us to give up our position. Did you notice? Although Saul was a king, he got rid of his robes and he dressed in everyday clothes. What a beautiful point of symbolism for us, those of us who are being driven, even right now, by fear. It will cause us to give up our position. Now, allow me to make this a little bit more personal. As I look back over my story, I see there are times where I sacrificed my position as a child of God, and I took on an identity that was never mine to own in order to try to manage my fear. And it didn't work. It doesn't work for Saul, and it doesn't work for me, and it's not going to work for you. Much better for us to own our position as children of God, to find refuge, as we talked about last week in Him, rather than giving up our position in order to pursue our own solution. Strong caution there. Secondly, fear will cause us to reverse sound decisions. Fear will cause us to give up position and then reverse sound decisions. It's exactly what happened to Saul, and we fall for the same thing. So here's a question that you can ask yourself, especially if now you're trapped in situations that are making you afraid. Are the decisions that you're making in fear going against decisions you've already made when you weren't afraid? That's a difficult question to answer, isn't it? Are you acting in the reverse way of what you were when you were of sound mind? I want to point out, making the turn now here at the end of this teaching, Saul experienced distance from God because he was disobedient to God. This is the difficult part of what we're going to discuss today. God did not answer Saul. Was it because God was just holding out on Saul? Did he just have a bad day or suddenly he turned on Saul? That's not the case. Saul experienced distance from God, not being able to find God because he had disobeyed God. This isn't a popular thing to talk about today, but I think if we start to discuss this, it'll help so many of us steer our stories in a way that will allow our lives to go better as God has originally intended. So many times God feels distant from us because we have offended Him with our actions and we've gone against the things that He has taught us, the way He has taught us to be. I want to say it very plainly to you today. Sometimes we feel the absence of God and it's not His fault. It's our fault. God has been very clear about the type of people that we should be, about how our relationship between Himself and us should be. There's an agreement, and when we break that agreement, we feel distance from God. Now, certainly, when we make the turn, God is there for us, full of grace, full of mercy. The Bible even says this, the kindness of God that causes us to even turn back to Him in the first place. I'm not trying to paint the picture of an angry God, but I do believe that we should develop a healthy respect towards God. There's a distinct difference between fear driving us to God and faith driving us to God. God certainly knows the difference because He can measure our heart. The encouraging news today is that when we do turn, God is going to be there for us. What I don't want is for us to fall into the same trap as Saul. And here's the trap: to convince ourselves that the large army or the thing that's making us afraid is actually our largest enemy. Ephesians 6:12 is one of the most ignored verses in the modern church, and I'm on a mission to change that. We're going to read it together today, and I want us to adopt the perspective that it presents to us, because I believe if we do, then we will be able to get on top of this emotion of fear and allow it to stop driving our behavior and the actions that we're taking. Let me read it for us. Ephesians 6:12 says, "We're not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places." This is a verse in the Bible of extreme clarity and absolute honesty, that the things that we're fighting are actually being driven by things that we can't see. The thing that's making us afraid actually isn't the most powerful enemy in our story. We have a much larger enemy, and that enemy has been operating on an equation with the children of God almost since the beginning. Today, we're exposing that equation so we can break the power of fear. This gets me excited. The enemy is bringing an ancient equation into our current situation. And from my perspective, it's working. And that's why we're talking about it today. I want it to stop working. Here's the equation. He says to us, "I will make them afraid. And if I can get them afraid, they will take rash action and forget who God is." Think about your own story, the things that you regret the most, the turns in your life that have cost you the most in the end, just like Saul. Did it start with fear? That shows a clear presence of the enemy, the one who wants to rob life from you in your story. If he can make us afraid, he can cause us to take rash action, and in that action, we forget who God is. Now, this isn't a teaching today that just calls us to think about things. It's a teaching that's calling us to action. Again, we spent a lot of time describing the problem today, so let's actually get to the solution. How do we not allow fear to drive us so heavily? In order to do that, we have to start working the muscles required for us to respond differently to this stimulus. There's one step I'm calling all of us to take this week, this action. I'm making it simple, one step, so that we can all participate in the experiment of giving it a shot. I believe we should take control of our thoughts and give them to the one who doesn't suffer from the disease of fear. This is our action step. Those thoughts that run through our mind, rather than entertaining them, we capture them and we submit them to the one who doesn't suffer from the same disease of fear that we do. This is how the Bible puts it in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. "For though we walk in the flesh," the Bible's saying, although we are people, we experience the world as human beings. We're not waging war according to the flesh. Those of us that are following Jesus, we have an advantage because we know exactly what we're fighting. "For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power. They're from God to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God." And here's the advice. "We take every thought captive to obey Jesus." See, this is where it comes full circle. Our own discipline will not solve crippling fear, but the divine power of Jesus Christ can. So what's our responsibility? When we become afraid, when that thing comes into our story, as practiced as it is, often backed by billions of dollars, when we experience that stimulus, we take that thought captive and we submit it to Jesus. It comes down to two words, capture and commit. Capture and commit. As I have that thought of fear, unlike Saul, I will capture that thought and I will commit it to Jesus and his power and his ability. And the last thing I'll do is walk away and trust him with it. Beautiful advice from the Bible. When I'm afraid, I trust God. This is exactly how it works out. Capture that thought and commit it to Christ. I believe this teaching has the ability to set so many people in our community free for the long term if we'll actually allow it. Let's pray together. God, this step that we're taking as a community that we're committing to may be some of the most difficult things that we've ever tried. So God, I'm asking for your presence in it. I'm asking that you, in your supernatural way, strengthen us, convince us. God, in that unseen place where the battle is raging for our souls, that you would move in, that you would defend us, that your power would defend us. God, as a community, as we navigate the next few months, could you help us to not be slaves to fear, but to trust you? Give us the ability to do the things that you're calling us to do, even through this negative example of the king, Saul. We thank you for your presence, your provision over Vertical Church. May it continue. In Jesus' name, amen.